This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
We have a single guest today. He is a playwright, a thespian, a noted attorney, former Republican Attorney General of the state of Arizona, former KTAR radio host, a slight on an otherwise distinguished career, possible future candidate for the United States Senate, and car salesman. Our guest is Grant Woods. He is all of the above, or maybe all of the above but one. If you want to determine that, you should Google Joe Isuzu and decide for yourself.
I'm glad that guy's gone.
Welcome to, I mean it. You Google that, and it's, well, that's old history.
That's
anyway,
funny.
Welcome to the Think Tank.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I think we should probably drop thespian in case you run for office again.
Well, I know. You remember it could be a problem.
Do you remember the Claude Pepper story?
No.
Claude Pepper ran for the United States Senate in Florida in the 1930s, I think it was, and his opponent accused him of, and I quote, "He is an admitted heterosexual who flagrantly practiced monogamy his entire life." Claude Pepper lost the election for the United States Senate.
Wow.
Later elected to Congress and was for many decades the hero of Social Security, but as a congressman.
Wow, so, that's funny. Well, you know, public education is important.
Yeah. Well, I want to start with something that's maybe a little off topic, but it's my favorite story of yours. Tell us the Bob Dylan story.
Oh, which Bob Dylan story?
Let's see. The Rhodes interview.
Oh, that. Yeah, well, yeah. I was told I talked my way out of a Rhodes scholarship by the guy who ran the committee. So I went to Occidental College in Los Angeles, a great school, and I was...
I dated an Oxy girl for 4 years in graduate
you
school.
You did?
I did, yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, that's... Yeah, there's some very nice girls there.
And I think a contemporary, you were probably class of 74, 75.
76. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was there when I was there?
It would have crossed in, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
She was class of 74.
Okay, we got to compare notes then. Yeah. That's funny. So anyway, I was a Rhodes Scholar nominee, and I went to the, I guess, the final interviews. And you went in one by one, and it didn't go too well. Let's just put it that way. But one of the main areas where I had a problem was one guy asked me, it's just, you got to, there's like four or five people up on a stage, and I'm down below in a chair. It was kind of an intimidating atmosphere, and they're drilling you with questions. And the first few didn't go too well because I disagreed with them on what they were talking about. And then the guy says, out of the blue, he goes, "Who's the greatest American poet of this century?" And I said, "Well, okay, greatest. What do you mean greatest?" And he goes, "Well, who has the most influence on people of your generation?" This is the 70s, right? I said, "Well, I'm sure I could name a few that you would expect me to name, but if you really want to know, people my age really don't read that much poetry. It's not an everyday life thing, but we're heavily influenced by poets." He goes, "Well, how could that be?" I said, "Well, the poets today are the songwriters, and they're great. They're very influential as they were in their day." And he says, "Like who?" I said, "Well, like, Bob Dylan and Joni Mitchell and Jackson Brown and Kris Kristofferson." And when I say Kris Kristofferson, another guy, these guys were all old. And he woke up and said, "Oh, I was a Rhodes Scholar with Kris Kristofferson." I said, "Well, then you probably know what I'm talking about." He goes, "Not really." And then the last guy commented and he says, "Young man, in my day, we had great songwriters. We had Cole Porter. We had Harold Arlen. And they didn't fancy themselves as poets." And I said, well, with all due respect, sir, if you don't know the difference between blowing in the wind and over the rainbow, then I can see why you don't understand. And that was pretty much it. It was off to Arizona State.
Yep. There you go. But to put a final cap on the story, this past year, Bob Dylan won the
How Nobel. About that? Yeah. And Harold Arlen, as great as he was, did not win the Nobel Prize. Also, so I saw two great songwriters last week in New York. I saw Bruce Springsteen on Broadway, which was fantastic. And then the other night I saw Lucinda Williams, who is another great songwriter. So, and great poets, by the way.
So I think we should add Prognosticator to your list. Of
there you go.
By
that's
the way,
right.
I'm in awe of your creative versatility. It must be fun to exercise the your right brain. And I say this as a 99% left brain person. I'm the son of not one but two mathematicians.
Oh my goodness! Wow.
And have a single creative product in my life. We use it as the exit music to this show.
Oh, fantastic!
Which I wrote under the tutelage of a Brown professor by the name of Paul Nelson, who was a composer and, among other things, a graduate of Phoenix Union High School.
Fantastic! So that's very cool. Well, you got to do more. You know, what are you like? I also saw the play last week of To Kill a Mockingbird. It's in previews. And so you don't want to, in your music career, you don't want to be like Harper Lee and have one song.
I'm a one-hit wonder.
Oh, wow. Well.
But I'm glad to have done it. And it took me years of cajoling. And the reason I have the piece, and you know, you orchestrate something for a 30-35 piece band, it's tough to get somebody to play it.
Absolutely.
And
that's huge.
Years ago, I had the Brown Stage Band put half of them up at my house. They came out here, played at the state fair, stuff like that. And I cajoled them for years to cut me a recording of it. Finally, all of a sudden, one day, there's an MP3 in my inbox. And I said,
how cool is that? We got to do more.
It was.
It's never too late.
You know, well, I had a lot of help with that. I had a great composer, and the story was I'd asked to do an independent study in composition, and the professor involved, Paul Nelson, gave me a tutorial. I'd come into his office every week, and he'd play something out. He'd play it, and then he'd say, give me a little riff, and he'd say, why don't you take that and run with it
for a little bit.
And at the end of the semester, I had a new composition.
That's the beauty of a liberal arts education also.
Indeed, it is. Mm-hmm. Often underappreciated, as is. You know what? I think what gets short shrift, and I did not do major study in this area, but that people like dump on philosophers.
Mm-hmm.
I think about, well, what does a philosopher do?
No, it's
they process. They are trained to think. I said, what's a good job for a philosopher? How about president of the United States?
Yeah,
somebody
sure.
who has all the expertise in the world, but has to sift through information and arrive at wise decisions. You know, people
Absolutely.
Think it's some guy spouting off in a coffee shop.
And
it's not being. It's the opposite of being a libertarian or something else, where you're really an ideologue.
Right.
They call that a philosophy, but a philosopher doesn't just adhere to
right.
a philosophy. They are, in fact, the most inclined to consider new ideas if confronted with arguments and facts.
Fantastic.
We're reaching a break, but I want to get into other topics, but I think I want to cut the break early because we're at a logical point. And when we come back, I have a I'll feed you the question ahead of time. We're in a very bad place as a country. We are divided. Our politics is vituperative. And the question will be, have you ever seen anything like this, and how do we get out of it? When we return with Grant Woods in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're here with Grant Woods. Our first segment was all digression, but I wanted to take us to a kind of broad, you know, kind of philosophical, social look. Where do we stand as a country? We seem divided in a way that I haven't seen since the 1960s. And, you know, I thought about, is this better, is it worse? It doesn't matter. They were both really bad periods.
Yeah, I think we're not in a good place. And I think it will take leadership to get us out of this place. But I think it can be done. I've come to believe more and more in my life that leadership counts. People can lead us in the wrong direction. They can really change people's quality of life for the better or worse. And that's at all levels of government and other influencers. It's not just government, but it's important that we have people who speak to our brighter angels and our better angels than the darker ones. And I think we've seen that. I think modern technology has and modern life has exacerbated that problem. There probably was a lack of leadership or negative leadership at other times in our country, but the word doesn't spread as easily and as quickly as it does today. We also have this problem of people all being in their own echo chambers and not really hearing the other side and being able to easily label the other side and villainize the other side. All these are bad things, I think, for our country. I think we need leadership, particularly from the president, but all of our leaders who talk about the positive things in our country and the great foundations of our country and the great history of our country, the aspirational history of our country and future of our country. So I do worry about it. I think for the first time in my life, I've recognized that what has happened in other countries in world history could happen in the United States, and we need to fight against that.
Yeah, I went to Berkeley a few months ago. They were playing a theatrical version of "It Can't Happen Here."
Interesting,
and it was, it was kind of frightening, and not just the play, but you think about what I. You look at the anger at some of these rallies,
mm-hmm.
and you say, you know, I'm not saying we're going down their path, but this is feels like Germany 1932. Now, we don't have to go in that direction, but mm-hmm. God, there's – how does, you know, better angels and appealing to that – it seems a whole lot easier to stoke up anger at the
it
other
is.
Side.
It is, except I think at our core – we understand and we can certainly be led to appreciate that the American way that is a, in my view, a very positive way. I'm proud of what our country has always lifted up as its goals and fought for. We haven't always met them. We never will. But
there's something to be said for being aspirational.
We are aspirational. That's what we have mm-hmm. to. And, you know, this play that I wrote and was in recently. You know, we wrote about that, and the one senator character talked about that the country is aspirational. So for example, the things that our founding fathers said, I think were great things. The things that we believe in, the things that we engraved into stone, and then the critics will say, well, yeah, but you know, they had slaves, and
there's been slaves in most of human history,
was a terrible thing. No. But the positive thing is we fought a civil war to change that. And then we still didn't, women didn't vote and people couldn't do this in the area of civil rights. Yeah, but then we continued to fight against that.
And that aspirational message became an important part of that struggle.
Absolutely. And it needs to be part of our daily dialogue here, not the opposite. So it's not a small thing when the President of the United States continually attacks the press as the enemy of the people. The press is not the enemy of the people and never has been the enemy of the people. Quite the contrary. It's part and parcel of what we're all about as a free society. So that has to stop. Look, I was in office. I served in office for 8 years. I didn't always like what was written about me. It's very easy to fall into that confrontational woe is me trap. But you've got to keep the bigger picture in mind. And what would this look like if we didn't have a free press? And so it's very dangerous to have people at the top, and including the leaders that facilitate that and allow it to happen without comment or without action. When you have people attacking the basic institutions, the courts, well, they're just political. They're just like any other politician. That the Congress needs to do what the president wants. They're not a separate and equal branch. That the press is fake.
Those
that
were all
elections are rigged. Yeah, this we do.
Those are authoritarian notions. That's
absolutely,
what you hear coming out of places with that we do not consider ourselves to be like.
That's correct. And so. And also, if you look at world history, you see that that people who just let that slide and didn't step up ended up being as much a part of the problem as anyone else. So we just have to fight back against that. And, I'm willing to do that. And I think I think Americans need to do it, and they need to do it now. We can disagree on different issues. We in times past, presidential years, you take your pick. And I do believe you should support the president who is elected as much as you can. But this is a different area right now. And I think we got to call people out, and we got to stand up for basic American values, even if that means opposing the president or other leaders.
We'll pick up this discussion with Grant Woods when we return in just a moment. In the Think Tank on KTR.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back in the Think Tank with Grant Woods, Renaissance Man. We've just had an election in this country, in this state. There's a handful of races that are indeterminate, but that, I don't want to go at that micro level. I'd like to know what you think about what the election globally says about where we are as a country and as a state.
Well, that's a good question. I think again, people who are in their silos probably continually get surprised nowadays on election days. Because they just can't imagine that their person didn't win or didn't do better. The fact of the matter is that much of the country is split very evenly. I think Arizona, Arizona is split as well. I think we saw that a very, very close races for the most part, not all of them, the ones that are not gerrymandered. I think there's a lot more support for the president than a lot of people would think who don't support him, and it's for a variety of reasons. I think part of it's it's odd that you would support the president because you're anti-establishment, but there's a little bit of that going on, I think, for sure.
He managed to somehow create that. He can run the government and be anti-government.
Yes, it's an amazing feat, but there is kind of some of that we're still sticking it to the man, even though he is the man now.
Or a billionaire with inherited wealth who's standing up for the little guy. Because I'm just like you.
It's still working. Yeah. That sentiment is still out there. And then, of course, another large group of supporters of the president who support some of his basic policies. And so they're seeing that, well, I may not approve of his behavior or how he does things, but I do support the basic conservative things that he's doing. And then, then we have people who, find him abhorrent on all levels. And then we have people who just completely disagree with him on issues. So, I think Arizona, where we're at, I still think we're a pretty moderate state. I think candidates matter. I think you could say maybe we lean a little right, but it depends. Depends.
I mean, the
on
difference between the vote
that.
For governor and senator illustrates.
Yeah, there's
that
a good
point.
Example on that. I think Governor Ducey ran a very, he's an ice cream man, and yet he's quite vanilla. It's just kind of odd. If I owned the ice cream company, I don't think I'd be so vanilla.
I think he yielded at exactly the right moment. He was in this studio and said, well, teachers love to help him, but there's only 1% available. That's it. Came back here the next day and said, well, we got 20% now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, you know. So he's, you know, he was very disciplined, and he was pretty much right down the middle. And David Garcia, I think, is a good guy. And I really appreciate where he's coming from. Is he's got a big heart, but where he was running is not where Arizona is.
Okay? Well, a couple of statements that I think Ducey was able to drive into the ground: the statement about the wall.
Yep.
And the other one about closed down ice, when what he really meant was this outfit that's putting kids in cages has to be completely revamped.
We're not going
to
get rid of ice.
But what and nobody who says kill ice is setting get rid of the function. They're
not
saying let's have an entity that doesn't cage kids but still protects their border. But Governor Ducey was able to just drive those two into the ground. And at that point, I think the election was over.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that's unfortunate that that we can't have a more a deeper and more nuanced discussion of issues. But one thing I did learn in politics over the years is that if you're explaining the nuance of your position, you're in trouble. Okay. And that's too bad, because most things are nuanced.
Well, most issues, I think, that are still around, we've already solved all the easy stuff.
You're
exactly the issues that are left
are
there because they're hard, which probably means there's not a 30-second soundbite solution that is really going to fix it.
That's correct.
You know, the wall is not going to deal with the poor. You know, I read an interesting study on the whole migration thing. Mm-hmm. Bottom line estimate was that as a result of border enforcement, we probably have 30% more undocumented immigrants than we would have had. And why? Sounds counterintuitive.
They fly in.
But no, here's the rationale. Migrant workers used to come here, work, go back home.
Right.
Individual,
mostly
men.
Oh, now they couldn't
get
back, yeah.
Now they can't get back, so they send for their families. The families get across the border. They establish residencies. They have kids who are citizens. And so they end up being kind of Americanized because they're here all the time. If they could have, if they knew that they could get back in, they'd leave. They would have never sent for their wife and kids, because, you know, would you like to be a migrant to this country where to a lot of people you're not wanted, you're fearing deportation?
Right.
You know, no, you want to live where you grew up.
They're doing it for economic reasons,
yes.
That's for sure. Yeah. I think you make a good point, though, that the difficult problems are the ones that are left, be it immigration or health care or homelessness or safety nets or affordability of college or public education. Mm-hmm. These are tough problems of how do we resolve them. One thing, though, that we should know is that they are difficult, and that means that we need the best and the brightest. We need all hands on deck to try to solve these problems. And it makes no sense. It wouldn't make sense in your business. It wouldn't make sense in your family or anywhere else for you just to take a portion of your group and say, well, let's just hear from these people. We're not going to hear one thing from the other side. We don't want to hear from them. That's not the way to get things done. And it's not the way the country used to be. And in the United States Senate or in the House, that needs to change. And the president of the United States needs to work closely with people in the Congress. But all of them, and I do go back to John McCain. Senator McCain was a tremendous chairman of the Armed Services Committee. Phenomenal. If you talk to anyone on that committee, it's a big committee. And almost as many Democrats as Republicans. And I guarantee you every one of them will tell you that was one of the great experiences of their life, being on that committee with him. How did he handle it? Everybody got their say. Everybody got to put in amendments. The most junior Democrat is going to be heard from. And we're going to seriously consider everything they say and every amendment they put up. But here's the deal. When we're done and we've accepted what we've accepted, then we're all going to go forward together here, because no one's going to get everything that they want. And so in defense, which is controversial, it's not like a gimme, The last defense bill was passed out of armed services unanimously, and ultimately 98 to 2 on the floor of the Senate. That's amazing in this day and age. That's why they named the bill after him.
And the other thing was a lot of mutual respect between John McCain and Hillary Clinton.
Sure. Why not? And why not?
Well, because it's death in the Republican Party.
Well, but too bad. You know, John, she didn't support John when he ran for president. He didn't support her. But they had great respect, and they could work with each other, and they did work with each other. And why wouldn't we do that? Why would we say right now we don't want to hear from that entire group? Why? Because they might not have some good ideas. If we talk about health care, that's what McCain wanted to happen. That's what needs to happen. I believe that the Republicans were willing to gut the Affordable Care Act and just let it go and let people hang. Okay,
and they may have paid a price in the recent election.
They should have paid a price
because
they didn't have a plan.
It was easy to be against Obamacare because it's a complicated thing, has some negative things.
Sure.
But in this last election, they said, wait a minute, those with pre-existing medical conditions,
yeah, we were for that.
You've thrown them out on the street.
They did.
And that brought home the negative consequences of just killing the whole thing.
You can't just kill the whole thing. You have to have, I mean, healthcare is something that is important to people. It's a real life issue. And so it's not politics. It shouldn't be politics. It should be, okay, just like I said, everybody gets their say. Okay. I don't think you should have gotten rid of it. You should have said, okay, yeah, there's problems with
it.
It was a whole new thing. Let's fix it. How do we fix it? And I want to hear from everybody, liberal, conservative, moderate, everybody. But let's all act in good faith, because here's the problem. And again, the current leadership exacerbates this problem. If I am a Democrat, the Republican is not my enemy, and vice versa, because at the end of the day, we're all in the same boat, right? We're all Americans, and we've got to move beyond this. We can battle it out in an election, but then we have to actually get some things accomplished, and to do that, we should respect each other and listen to each other.
Observation. The John McCain you described is no longer there.
Right.
Jeff Flake realized he could not get a Republican nomination. He's out. Senator Corker from Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican Party, I think, is now the Trump Party.
It is.
There are some people who privately object to him, but they are terrified of him. Who's left on the Republican side with the potential of being bipartisan?
Well, I think there are some. It's not me. I've fought these fights my whole life, and I've been willing to fight those fights within the Republican Party. But now I've left the Republican Party and joined the Democratic Party.
That's news.
And I don't feel that I feel the party left me. And again, I was always willing to fight it out within the party. But when you have almost 85-90% of the party pledging allegiance to Donald Trump rather than the principles that I thought they believed in, then it's not a place I wanted to be anymore. So who's there? I think John Kasich is still there. I think Mitt Romney could be a very interesting senator.
He has the independence to be.
He does, because he doesn't need this. Why should...
Well, also, I think he can't be threatened by Trump.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Politically. Mm-hmm. Well, one, he's there for 6 years for sure.
Mm-hmm.
He's from Utah.
He's from Utah.
And Utah...
I
don't think you can touch him there. And also, I will say... I grew up in Mesa. Okay, so I've been lucky enough to be part of the LDS community my entire life without being LDS. Okay, and that's the same thing in Utah. If I lived in Utah, I would feel the same way. And they are as a group. Obviously, if you have to generalize, you'd say generally pretty conservative, but I think they don't support the behavior of the president, and they do not support his harsh views on immigrants or the poor.
The Mormons are basically very accepting of immigrants.
Totally. Yeah. Let me tell you something. You go out to services any Sunday, and you will see a lot of people being in Mormon churches that are being cared for and helped and getting spiritual guidance who are not here legally.
We'll be back with a final segment with Grant Woods in the think tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Well, we're back with Grant Woods. We're running out of time before we run out of topics. One thing I wanted that is very current to ask you about. It looks like Donald Trump this week has appointed an acting AG who has urged defunding of the special prosecutor. You are an attorney general of the state of Arizona. I'm just scratching my head. It might be legal, but how can any legitimate legal system permit the subject of a potential criminal investigation to influence how the prosecutors or investigators behave?
They can't.
It's beyond my comprehension.
They can't. It's not right. Hopefully, I'm not so sure it is legal, and hopefully it's not. It won't be allowed to happen. It's against everything that we believe in our system of justice. So I think it's, again, if the president does attempt this, if that's the goal here, then it's got to be stopped. We have to stand up for again, our American principles, no matter what, and no matter who is trying to subvert them. So I think the American public needs to, you saw immediately there were protests in the streets, and we're going to have to do whatever we have to do to send the message that we will not stand for that. What you've got in Bob Mueller, I of all the people I've met in my law enforcement career, you couldn't find a better person than him. Mm-hmm. And he will not be deterred, and he will not be biased one way or the other. I think we need to wait. Nobody knows what he's going to say. Let's see what he has to say. Let's see who he indicts, and let's see what his report says. Yeah. And when the facts are in, then we can make a judgment here. But to try to subvert that in advance is wrong, and it makes you wonder what's there.
So I have great faith in Mueller. I think has been about as straight and narrow as you could find anywhere.
Yes.
Throughout his entire career.
Yes.
He's sort of above politics.
He's the best, yes.
It's good that he's a registered Republican just because it mm-hmm. removes that argument. But doesn't he report now to the acting AG who has openly said that, we could close this down by defunding it? What if the acting AG tells him, I don't want you to pursue this? What happens?
Well, I think then we're just going to have to, there are ways around that, and we'll just have to do it. I think again, Mueller, here's what he's for. Same thing I was for when I was attorney general, and that is you got to do the right thing, and we're going to try to find justice here, period, and let the chips fall where they may. If we clear everybody, we clear everybody. If we've got to charge a bunch of people, including very important people, then we charge them. That's the way it's going to be. So I think he's already thought through all of this. He understood this was a possibility. And I think you set it up where there are prosecutions available on the state level from state attorneys general. You have things in other courts with other folks who can bring them. You can always report your report on the president to the Congress. And now that the House is Democratic, I think that will happen. And it will get out there. It'll all be out there. And I hope that people who say they put country first will put their country first, regardless of where the chips fall. I hope that what he comes up with clears the president completely. I believe that. I couldn't feel more strongly about that. I hope that's what it is. It'll be best for the country, and I want what's best for the country. But if wrongdoing happened here, then, and especially if it involved a foreign power, a hostile foreign power, then everybody needs to go down on this. Every one of them. I want them all prosecuted. I want them all out, because we're Americans first. So that means we stand up for America, and we let the chips fall wherever they fall.
The thing I wonder about, it seems to be the behavior of a guilty man. If there's nothing there, why wouldn't he just get out of the way and let the process evolve?
That's been my experience as a prosecutor, is that's not how innocent people behave.
You know, I think back to Watergate and Nixon behavior. And frankly, and I didn't think of it at the time, but once it was all out, I said, okay, now the Nixon behavior makes sense. Yeah. Other than taping yourself, that right. had to be an act of incredible hubris.
It was, you're right.
I mean, we
that
thought,
was ego.
How would any rational person tape himself committing a crime? And he was a lawyer, so he knew that. But other than that, he obviously thought they'd never get it.
Correct.
So other than that, you know, his effort at cover up
made total sense.
It was the one thing that fit all the known facts.
Thank you. And I remember that was a revelation for me back in the day. I said, well, let's just assume for a minute when I was at Occidental. Mm-hmm. I said, let's just assume for a minute. What if he did? What if he was involved in this right from the beginning? How would he act? And it all fell into place.
Which
so
is
I would
beyond
ask
our
this,
comprehension. I think even most of the people who didn't like Nixon
didn't believe that.
Did not believe that he was involved in planning it. They thought he was involved in the cover up.
No, they didn't. No one thought that, but it all fit. So I would just say this: apply that same process here, and let's just say he was guilty from the beginning. He was in on it from the beginning. He was colluding from the beginning. Then what sort of behavior would follow?
More or less what we've had.
Thank you.
That's
so. That's the problem. That's why we can't allow anyone to cover this up or push it away. We need to know what the special prosecutor has found, and whatever happens or needs to happen, we take it from there. And we can't be afraid of it. But we also can't be afraid if the president is innocent here and is cleared, then that's great. And we
that's
should
the
all,
easy way. Then we if that
great.
Comes out, then it's all over.
That'd be great.
And we need
I hope
not
that's
worry
the
about
case.
It
if that's not the case, though, I would just tell you if I was in the prosecutor's shoes where I once was for 8 years for Arizona, I would call him as I saw him. If that means the most powerful guy goes down, then he goes down.
But it wouldn't be the prosecutor that would take him down. The president, I think most scholars agree, is immune from criminal prosecution while president. That would then become a political issue.
It most likely would, depending on what he did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. What did he do? And what did he know? And when did
we'll find out soon enough, I think.
Sooner or later, the truth always comes out.
Yes, it does.
Well, thank you, Grant Woods. I hope you'll come back.
Thanks for having me.
We could have done another hour
Absolutely.
Easily.
Thank you.
Most interesting conversation. You got a Twitter handle or something you want to plug?
Yeah, at Grant Woods. Yeah, that'd be great. Okay. I'd love to hear from people.
Michael J. O'Neill is mine, and all of these podcasts are available at ktar.com. The older ones are also archived at mikeoneill.org. See you next week in the Think Tank.